Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Happy Friday morning. We're at the Finance Committee and Resiliency, and we've got some work to finish up from our budget meeting a week ago. So this is a budget meeting, not a regular finance meeting. And with that, I'm going to ask Rafael to let everybody know how they can participate and listen in if they would like to. Thank you.
Good morning. Today's meeting of the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee has been scheduled in a hybrid format with a quorum of the committee physically present and remaining members, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. To participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462#, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they're using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if you're participating by phone.
Okay, thank you all for joining us. As I mentioned, we had four items that were left over that we put on the agenda today for discussion and possible action. We also have additional items that we gave staff additional time until September 14th to review. And the September 2 meetings where we vote will be the opportunity for public hearing. So, John, with that, I'm on page 8 of 25 of the briefing, and you've got an outline of four items. And I guess we'll just take them in order. So let's take the first one, MDPL enhancement request. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure, and I'd ask Daniel to go ahead and join me up here. If we can get the slide 4 up.
It's not a public hearing, but Daniel, I'm going to let you do this. This is your request, so go ahead and tell us what you're looking for.
Can we get slide 4 up, please?
Should I let him go first?
Yeah, so just real quick. So
let him go, and then.
For Art Deco Weekend, the city usually supports $100,000 worth of sponsorship, and the request here is to go up to $150,000. And so that covers a $31,000 increase in police off-duty and a $13,000 approximately increase in marketing. So, Daniel, maybe you could add a little color to that request.
Thank you very much,
Commissioner. Go ahead, Daniel. You're recognized.
Okay, thank you, Commissioners. My name is Daniel Serrato with Miami Design Preservation League. Our next Art Deco Weekend is 46, and we're going to be celebrating Art Deco around the world. And it's a few months before the World Congress on Art Deco, which is coming to Miami Beach for the first time in 30 years. So we want to really promote this event and Art Deco's influence around the world. One thing that happened last year was there was an off-duty rate adjustment with some of the city services. So we are being proactive in budgeting everything early. And so we notice a big change of $30,000. We are not sure with fire or parking yet, but so what we thought was if you all were open to it, if you could increase the city support by $50,000, that would give us the flexibility to pay for the city service increase, but it would also give us room for more marketing of the event. Currently, we spend $30,000 a year in cash ourselves on marketing, and we're planning to increase that about 17%. But we also thought it'd be a nice opportunity to kind of boost the marketing with the city's support. And so the total would be up to $150,000 based on how the city fees end up. And then the remaining, we'd be able to boost our marketing. As a nonprofit, we market with Miami Herald, Clear Channel, Atlantic Broadband, WLRN. And then we also have been doing some new signage. We've talked to some people at Design Miami about improved signage, and those of you who are there this past year will have noticed some new signage that we have that, you know, is really beautiful. There's some additional costs, and we'd love to share it with the city with your support.
Members, any questions?
I think it's a worthwhile investment. It activates the space.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Lately, I've been speaking kind of low. I don't know what's up with me. I think it's seeing the activation that they do during MDP during Art Deco weekend. I think it's a worthwhile investment. There's good energy in the street. People come out. And I think we get a good return on our investment, plus the publicity that we get from it when we go to the Bureau after their activities, and you see all the media that it generates for us in advertisement. I'm not going to say it's free advertisement because we invest in it, but the return, I believe, is good. So, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to support this request.
Mayor Gelber, you're recognized.
Yeah, I support it. Look, my only complaint has been that it's not bigger, frankly. I think it should be more visionary. It's sort of a Art Deco weekend is, honestly, it's, you know, that's who we are. We hold ourselves out as, and I've always thought we ought to have broader and deeper programming. So I'd support anything you guys want to do, but I'd urge you to think bigger because, frankly, populating that area with more stuff and adding ancillary events and things like that, I mean, we're an Art Deco community. So,
Commissioner Ariel.
Yeah, I agree with the mayor. I think I've told you each and every year, like, you know, tell us how you can make it bigger and better if you had the funds. So, I support this, and I'll tell you again, if you have a proposal in mind, you know, the following year, how to make it bigger and better, or even this year, I think you'd get support for that.
Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, you're recognized.
I'm full support on this, but I had a question for the administration. Oh, thank you. I had a question for the administration. How did the cost of policing, because the event size didn't change, go from $56,000 to $87,000? So I asked Daniel what happened, and he said that the rate of off-duty has gone up that much. I mean, that's a crazy amount of money.
I haven't vetted the numbers, but the off-duty rate did increase. That rate increased very specifically for the off-duties that work clubs. So I'm not sure how it affected this off-duty. I'd have to vet the number.
So the regular off-duty did not increase?
It did, but it was I don't think it was at the same level. So I am sure there was an increase. I don't know if it's at that number.
Because maybe if it's not that number, I mean, we save, you know, money too. I don't know. How does that go? When we do something like this, do we pay the police department directly, or do we give you the money and then you pay police department?
He hires the off duties to support the event.
I mean, go ahead, Lisa. You're recognized to answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the $100,000 is not given to MDPL. We hold it, and police invoices our department, and we pay them directly. And the cost, I believe, increased. Oh, Chief Jones is here, but about 25%.
Wow. You know, we want as many off-duty police officers as possible in that area, and raising the off-duty rate by 25% really does discourage businesses from hiring off-duty police officers. Is that all off-duty? Can we get off-duty elsewhere at a cheaper price? Because this, no?
No, and part of the issue is actually getting officers to work the off-duty. So the rise in the amount was specific to trying to encourage officers to want to take the off-duty.
Chief, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. Can you shed some light on this in terms of the rate? Is there a different off-duty rate for working a club versus working a non-club event?
There is, but first, let me sort of frame why the off-duty rates were raised in the first place. For a number of years, they were stagnant, actually. We had struggled to fill off-duty jobs, in particular, nightclubs. Cops simply didn't want to work it. And so the idea, after much, much debate, the idea was, let's raise it to an amount that would incentivize our police officers to work nightclubs. So it was raised to $90 an hour for nightclubs, $75 an hour for regular jobs.
I missed the first number. How much for clubs?
$90.
$90 and non-clubs is $75?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much. Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, do you have any more questions before I move on?
No, I'm not thrilled with the policy of $75 outside of clubs because it's very expensive. What would off-duty be in another city, for example?
It varies from city to city. I can't tell you off the top of my head where they are for neighboring cities. I could tell you, though, we had a real problem trying to fill off-duty jobs Much of the work, not all of it, much of the work is being farmed out to other organizations coming into the city, and that can be problematic at times, particularly when working nightclubs.
Are the police officers now working the nightclubs, and it's not a big...
They are.
Okay. All right.
Chief, is the 90 and the 75, is that a full wrap rate? So does that include benefits and everything, or are benefits on top of the 90? So is the 90 the pay to the officer, and then we pay benefits on top of that, or is the 90 inclusive of all cost?
No. So the 90 goes directly to the police officer, and there's an administrative charge as well, which is $12 an hour, tacked on top of that.
And that covers the overhead, or that covers pension and taxes, payroll taxes?
It covers the city's cost of administering the off-duty program.
John, can you shed some light on this? Who pays the payroll taxes, and where is that being covered? Do we know?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I think we need to double-check that
okay.
for you.
Members, how about we do this? How about we authorize up to $150,000, and then we can get some clarity in terms of if that's a full cost or if it's not. It is a 50% increase, which is a very dramatic amount. I don't know how this compares to other events that we sponsor, like Pride and some of the other things that we're doing. Are we giving them, or is this going to set a new precedent and everyone's going to come in for 150 now?
I think there's an argument, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please.
I think there's an argument to be made specifically with Miami Design Preservation League because they are a partner of the city. We do have a management agreement with them to occupy city-owned property and manage space for us and do certain type of programming specifically in this location of the city, this Ocean Drive location. So, you know, I think it'll be hard for other organizations perhaps to make the same type of request, particularly when they perhaps may not have the type of agreement and relationship that MDPL has with the city. So with that, Mr. Chair, what you were suggesting that we go up to the 150,000, if that's what you're suggesting, which I agree with, I'm happy to move it for you. I do think, given the increase in the off-duty rate and the challenges we've had hiring off-duty in the past, I think it's necessary.
Okay, I'll second that. So let's authorize, unless anyone has any objections, up to 150, and then John, you and City Manager do a little bit more work on that. And Daniel, it would be great if you could follow up on the Mayor and Commissioner Areola's request and maybe give us a white paper on things you could do to enhance the programming. This festival is very important to our city because it fits in with our culture, and it would be great if we could find ways to grow it. You may want to look in Napier, New Zealand, because they have a very big one is there, and it's very successful, and you may want to look at some of the things they're doing there.
I'm going there in February.
Are you? Okay, wonderful. You'll have a good time. It's a really amazing event and a great city. Sure. If you have a credit card. Oh, perfect. Did you hear that, Robert? Okay, we'll close this item. John, do you have enough? You have what you need?
Yeah, we're good there.
Okay, so let's move to the next item, which is the resiliency code enhancement request. And I think this was something Commissioner Areola had requested some additional information on. So let's move to that.
Yes. So we currently have a $1.2 million contract with a consultant to help us revamp our resiliency code, right? And so one of the enhancements, potential enhancements, a one-time enhancement that was put forward as part of this year's budget process was to enhance that scope by $500,000 to address potentially four additional items. So I just wanted to frame it up, and now I'd like to just invite Carmen Sanchez, the Deputy Planning Director, to kind of walk you through kind of what's the status of the current contract and then what is that additional scope that we are potentially.
Good morning, adopting. Carmen.
Good morning, Commissioner. Good
You're
morning,
recognized.
Everyone.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So as John mentioned, this was just nothing more than a placeholder as we move forward with the completion of the resiliency code as it is right now. We understand that Once we actually finish it and that the recommendations come back from the consultants and the city commissioners it adopts, that there might be other areas of analysis and study that's required. So some of the things that could come out of this are TDRs, parking, restructuring, things of that nature. The $500,000 was just a place marker. But we don't need it at this time. We want to have the consultant actually finish everything before we move forward. But it was just for that, to have that conversation, should come up.
Where is the 1.2, was that in the current year budget, John?
Actually, it was, 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was approved a couple of years ago, and we've just rolled it forward.
We rolled it forward as the project has. Right.
So this is a placeholder because you think you may need it. When is the report due?
So if we stay on the current timeline, we should have it adopted second reading in October.
Of this year?
Yes.
Okay. Ricky, Commissioner Ariola, this was yours. Maybe what we should do, members, is leave it as a placeholder, but then require the city to come back to us before you can spend any of it, after you get the report, because I'd like to see the report first before I authorize any more work. Ms. Hudak, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the reason, and again, this was one of many enhancements that departments requested, and in our conversations with the department, it was clear that we had to finish the current work, which was, in fact, funded. There was this additional scope that I thought needed to be properly vetted and discussed with the commission, and then the consultant would have to give us a number back. The department was projecting and thinking that that cost was going to be around $500,000, $500,000. So I felt that that was a really big number to kind of tie up without really knowing exactly what the consultant was going to scope. And I felt that that was something that once we were at that point, we could come back with a mid-year amendment. So it was not in my recommendation for enhancements because we had other priorities at the time. But obviously, if the commission wants to fund all of it or some of it and put the money in as a placeholder, we would always have to come back to the commission because we would have to amend the contract and come back with the additional scope anyway.
Okay. Commissioner Ariola.
Yes. Yeah, so colleagues, my thought on this, just previewed it at the meeting the other day. Going into next year, one of my, I'll say it's probably my top priority, is to tackle workforce housing. And one of the things I think we're going to need to do is, whether it's in-house or hire consultants, is to study, what other municipalities across the country or around the world are doing, particularly around things like TDR, transfer of development rights, which I think necessitates a discussion on FAR, and how we can use tools like that to incentivize development for workforce housing. And it's pretty complicated, but it can be replicated from what other municipalities are doing. So whether we have that talent in-house, I think we do, but I think everyone's really busy, or we have to go to outside consultants to bring back to us potential legislation that I think is going to have to go to voters next year in order for us to craft legislation that will, I think, give us the tools we need to create workforce housing in our city.
So what is your – do you want
I would ask that we earmark some money, whether we spend it or not. Remains to be determined, but I do think we're going to have some money for consultants to help us in that. So this came under sort of the resiliency category. I don't know that that's the right term, but I would like to set aside some money for some expertise to help us with potentially creating legislation to create workforce housing in our city.
Okay. John, we basically at the last meeting talked about a $21 million bucket, not necessarily a surplus that we have. It's actually because we're not funding a lot of needs because we're going to decide as we go how we want to spend that money. But so this $500,000, if we earmark it now, would that reduce that number to $20,500,000 or?
Yeah, at this point it wouldn't, and the reason is that $15 million that the excess reserves that we're recommending to help fund with the capital funding gaps is over and above what we think we might save in the third quarter or fourth quarter. So we're assuming that there'll be some savings there, and the one-time requests that are being recommended through the budget process, that's how we would pay for those. And so this one is $500,000, so it's not small, but at the same time, we think that we can afford to do that. It just wasn't recommended more for a timing issue, but we can certainly go ahead and include it.
Well, I don't know. My feeling is it's not a recommendation of the administration, and to Commissioner Arriola's point, we have other priorities, and so I would be inclined to earmark $250,000 for workforce housing analysis and study, and then have you come back after you get this report, and if you need more money on this resiliency, then present it to us at that time. But in the meantime, we should not, I don't think, encumber our funds. But Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, you're recognized.
Doesn't this work the other way around? It comes before us, and we approve funding to do an analysis of workforce housing, and then we fund it instead of earmarking money that we had not necessarily approved for workforce housing analysis. I think the process here has to be you bring an item to the body, we approve it, it goes and gets vetted, and then it comes back to us. Because this is not, I mean, I don't even know what that means. And now we're talking about revamping the entire, the code and going to referendum. And I'm going to be a no on it just because of the way that this is happening. This is not part of the resiliency code. It's not. I mean, you know, it's not. It's workforce housing analysis. So they're two totally different things. So you should come. And maybe I will. You know what? I might vote for it, Commissioner Arriola, but I'd like to see what they're proposing, approve that, and then you get the funding based on the fact that we approved that.
Let me address that. So we're not approving the expenditure of any funds today. What we're doing, and it happens in the entirety of our budget, is we make certain estimates of what we think we may spend. So we're not authorizing anyone to do any consulting work now. With respect to the resiliency, it sounds like the administration did not approve that or did not recommend that. So I'm comfortable with the administration's recommendation on that, but what Commissioner Arriola is saying is that he wants to work on workforce housing, and it's a high priority for me as well, and I've got some ideas on things that I want to do, and we may need some funds. We're not authorizing the administration to spend that. We are saying we just want to put aside some funds if we choose to spend it, and in which case they will come back. That way we won't have to do a budget amendment mid-year. So, Commissioner Fernandez, I see your hand up, your pencil up. Go ahead, you're recognized.
Yeah, just a question, because one of the things I had been speaking with Mr. Mooney about was understanding what is the amount of unused FAR, unused density we have in our city. That's something that I think is important as we speak about workforce housing, as we speak about possible policy untransferable developable rights for workforce housing. And he was explaining to me that one of the things with that is that it's a very complicated analysis to determine the amount of unused FAR that we would have available in the city. And I'm wondering, is this funding source, would this be a good funding source, for example, for a study like that in the future, if it were the will of this body to do that in the future? Just to have a better understanding of how these funds could be used.
And we could include that in the description that, you know, it's an earmark that we're not authorizing the administration to spend at this point. It's just that if they bring it and we approve it, then we don't have to do a budget amendment because it's already have a placeholder. So we're not approving. So if Commissioner Arriola so I'm comfortable not funding the $500,000 on resiliency because now I have a better understanding, Madam Manager, of why you didn't prioritize. We don't even have the report back yet. If we need more work, you'll come and we'll do a budget amendment if the body is so fit. But I'm comfortable earmarking $250,000 for zoning and workforce housing studies if the body is willing to do that. We're not spending anything. We're just doing a line. Does anybody have any objection to that? Go ahead.
One person does, but yeah, I'll move it.
Okay, I'll second it. Anyone object to that? Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, you don't want to do that, or?
We're not voting on spending it. We're just voting on a placeholder. That's fine then.
Okay, so show that done. So we will not fund that, but you'll put a placeholder, John. And Madam Manager, if, and maybe Commissioner Arriola wants to bring an item, a discussion or a take action item. I know I've got a lot of ideas on workforce housing as well, so I think we're all looking to prioritize that. With that, John, do you have what you need?
Yes.
Okay, let's close that out. Thank you very much. Let's move on to the third item, and that is the Collins Park Workforce Housing Project update, and that was something that I wanted to talk about. So someone from staff could just give us a status report so the full body will know where we are on that. This is a project that was authorized and approved some months back, but I know that we're still looking to try to close it out because interest rates went up, and there have been some financing challenges. Go ahead, Raquel, you're recognized.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Mayor, and Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Economic Development Director. This project came before the Commission in February to seek an amendment to the ground lease to allow for the workforce housing units to go from a 80% AMI to 120% AMI. And we have had some challenges over the past couple of months with getting to financial closing, particularly with the interest rates and the construction costs escalations that we've seen. This is just an overview of some of the approvals. The project became eligible for a permit in April. However, the permit has not been issued because the project has not received the financing in order to be able to pay for those permit costs. In July, Miami-Dade County approved an ordinance to waive fees for affordable and workforce housing projects, particularly impact fees. In July, next week actually, our planning board will consider a similar fee waiver opportunity for workforce and affordable housing projects. If favorable, we will move forward to first reading in September to ask the commission to vote in favor of those waivers. Next slide, please. So just a brief overview of the project. The workforce housing development project will be built on a surface parking lot. It's about 21 spaces. The developer is Servitas LLC, and they are joining us on the call virtually. The concept architect was Schulman and Associates, and their GC is Moss. The project is comprised of three major parts. There are 80 units of workforce housing. That would be on floors 3 through 7. There is a 32-bed dormitory floor for the Miami City Ballet, and that's the second floor. There's also a ground floor space that the city has committed to leasing. That's about 2,200 square feet. The cost to the city would be about $63,000 per year with a 2% escalator. The priority tenants are artists, educators, city employees, veterans, and other income-eligible resident workers. Next slide. So ultimately, this project is revenue-restricted. As I mentioned before, there are three major components that contribute to the project's revenues. The workforce housing units are income restricted based on HUD guidelines. So part of the amendment that was done in February allowed for 120% AMI. That increased the revenue just a bit to allow the project to become more viable. The 32-bed dormitory space that's going to be rented by the Miami City Ballet, it's starting at about $360,000 per year, and it's going to go up to about $400,000 per year. And again, the city has the first floor with the obligation to pay rent. So there are essentially no other ways to increase the revenue on the project. However, the expenses have gone up. The senior and subordinate debt, the percentage increases are between 1.5 and 1.8 since February. We've also seen a 4% increase in construction costs. So that boils down to a $2.85 million gap with the assumption that the city's fees will be waived as well as the county's impact fees. This also assumes that the guaranteed maximum price contract that they have with Moss escalates to 5%, so there is some cushion there in anticipation of that escalation. But this assumes that the interest rates will hold and remain the same. Next slide, please. So the administration is recommending two parallel options for the project to move forward. One was discussed at length, the Arts and Culture Geo Bond, and there's also a documentary surtax funding allotment that the county has that this project may be eligible for. We anticipate that the timeline for that application and evaluation and approval process will span about 6 months. It could be a little bit more in order to go to the Board of County Commissioners for approval. With the Arts and Culture Bond, I know you're familiar with the timeline on that, and so we are open to your feedback. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll take the personal privilege of going first, since this was my item and I requested it. This is a really high priority for me, and it should be, I think, for this body, because we've got 80 units of workforce housing being held up, and we've got the ballet dormitory being held up. We need to move on this. This has been since April, and so I would really like the body to go ahead and authorize the 2.85 out of the funding that we have right now, with the provision that we continue to seek alternative funding sources. So there is a strong chance that we will get the county to help us. We're talking to them right now. And there is a strong chance that, remember when we did the cultural bond the other day, they wanted $8 million, approximately eight, I think it was 7.8. We cut that in half. So if the cultural bond is approved, that approximately $4 million will be put in directly. That money's not going to go to the ballet. It'll be put into this project to reduce the rents that the ballet will have. So it's basically a cash flow move, but I would really like it if we could do this, and I would like somebody to move it if you're so inclined.
Commissioner, I'll move it.
Okay, I'll second it. Commissioner Fernandez.
Just a question. Is that from that $4 million, from that line item that we created, that miscellaneous line item that we created for art/workforce housing?
No, that's in addition. One. So
okay.
What we did in the ballet made a proposal about a $20 million. That was approximately $8 million was for their portion. So they wanted basically to buy down or buy out the lease. So they wanted to basically get the capital and put it into the project so they would not have to pay rents. And we said, no, we want you to have some skin in the game. So we'll do that for half. So it's if approved by the voters, then that money will go into the project, which will then allow us. That would be a third alternative, perhaps, to getting our 2.8 back immediately. But I think the county, there's a strong chance that the county may help us in this current budget year. Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, you're recognized.
Is our approving this money, number one, going to affect our budget this year? And number two, will it have any effect on the counties giving us the money? If they see that we've already approved it in our budget, are they going to say to us, well, why are we going to give it to you if you already have it approved?
I can't speak for the county. I know that I myself spoke to a commissioner who is very interested in assisting us. But again, I didn't describe this particular scenario, so I don't want to speak for the county. The 2.85, I'm assuming, John, would come out of the $21 million?
Correct.
Right. So I think that we can frame the county that we're, in essence, loaning our money in hopes that they're going to help us. And it could be that they're going to come back and help us with half of it or something. But the more time that passes that we don't get this going is that we're not going to have the workforce housing. We're not going to have the dorm for the ballerinas. And the costs are going to continue to go up. And so if we wait another 6 months or a year, we may be looking at $3 or $4 million. So that's why I want to move forward with it. Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, at a time where we have several infrastructure projects and really important stuff, we've got parts of the city where the water quality is, there's no contact stuff, you know, we keep putting money into this stuff, which is really, these are almost luxury items to some extent in the nonprofit world. And look,
I'm not going to vote against it right now, but I really think that you got to fix your pipes and foundation before you throw all these extra millions. We have a lot of projects around the city that have been pending way longer than this workforce housing, and we're not allocating the money to those. And so, you know, this is a big favor that we're doing to push forward your initiative, which I appreciate a lot. But I also think that, you know, we're really not spending on the right stuff. I think we should really be focusing on public works. We're having sewer main breaks all over the place. And I really feel like, you know, we really need to refocus on what's important here. Is our infrastructure important? Or, you know, I understand that they're both important. You invest in the arts and you get a social impact and you create an economy. I get that. But when your sewer's crumbling, this isn't where you spend money. And by the way, we have surpluses right now, and we don't know what's going to happen in the future. And we are bonding more money. We're going to be taking geo-bond tranches of money. We're going to be bonding more money for water and sewer on people's water bills at a time when we have a housing crisis across the city. People are, you know, sending us eviction notices. Just remember what's important and what our real job is to make sure that our infrastructure is there. And so I'm just saying that, you know, we had such a gap in a lot of our capital funding projects. If we had $2.85 million, that money should go to that passive park, for example, in Bayshore. They've been waiting for 12 years. So this is a new project, this artist workforce housing. And it's great. But what about those people waiting for their passive park for 12 years? I don't understand why this is the priority. The administration, I mean, how do you feel about this?
Well, let me, first of all, this body made a policy decision that we were going to fund underfunded projects before starting new projects. And yes, the Bayshore Park is very important, but it hasn't started yet. And so this is not a cultural expense. This is workforce housing, and it's a dorm for the ballet company. And when the dorm is completed, then the ballet members will no longer be renting apartments, and there will be more availability of the apartments that they will vacate. So this is addressing housing, specifically workforce housing and 80 apartments. So, Commissioner Ariola, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated by comments that are being made. So I guess, Commissioner Rosa-Gonzalez, you're just to be clear, so we can make policy around some of the things you're saying, your top priority is infrastructure as opposed to workforce housing? Because wait, let me finish.
Infrastructure,
Rosa-Gonzalez, please wait until you're recognized.
Because, I mean, I get the sense that, you know, comments are just being made and thrown out there based on who's proposing the idea. But just to understand where you're coming from so that we can, you know, in the future set our priorities, if your priority is going to be infrastructure, fine. I fully support that vision. But, you know, I've heard you many times say we need more workforce housing. And then here we're trying to, on the last two items, tackle workforce housing. And now you're like, no, we got to fund sewer pipes, which actually are not much of our responsibility. That's a county responsibility, but whatever. But if you want to go for infrastructure, great. I will support that. I also want to know how we're going to pay for that, because part of paying for that is development that generates revenue for our city that we then can fund for infrastructure, public safety, things like that. So I just don't quite understand your circular logic of like attacking everything that pays for the things that you want, and then say things like, I want workforce housing, and then when it's proposed, you attack it. So I just think this is all about a sort of a personality thing. Like you attack ideas based on who's proposing them, as opposed to actually backing up what you're saying to the public that you want to achieve. So do you want workforce housing? If the answer is yes, then you approve this. If the answer is just want to attack ideas that I have or Commissioner Richardson has, then you're not really backing up what you're saying.
Commissioner Rosa-Gonzalez, I'll recognize you if you want to respond.
What I think is, you put it in the geo bond, and I voted for that. We put in an application to the county.
You voted against. You voted against.
Wait.
It's in the no. I voted for the GL bond.
No. 5-1, you did not.
So you put it in the GL bond, and I voted for that. You put in a request to the county, and I voted for that. Before we allocate the $2.85 million, I'd like to see the list of all the capital projects. What are all the gaps that we have? Could it go someplace else? And what the recommendation of the administration is?
So one thing we're not going to do is spend the money twice. We're not going to spend double what we need. So this is an allocation. If it's not needed, it will not be spent. So if we get the other funding, then that will fill the gap. If we get the county money, that will fill the gap. So we're not spending this, but this is an authorization so we can move on with the project. Manager Hudak, go ahead.
Wow, like it hasn't been a challenging enough week, right? So how do I say this? All of our decisions here, especially as they relate to the budget, you know, what we fund defines our values and what we care about, what we prioritize. And that's the exercise that we're going through right now. We know and we specifically set aside an amount of money because we wanted the commission to have the flexibility to be able to prioritize that from a policy perspective for us. Our job is to make sure that we tell you what's shovel ready and what's the most imminent need. And obviously projects, a multitude of projects are at different points in the process. Some are in design, some are, prior to design, they're in design development, some are shovel ready. This project was not on our radar screen. I mean, we knew there was a gap. I don't know that we knew the extent of the gap, and it wasn't part of our deliberations budgetarily for purposes of what that pot could be used for. But the reality is that this is a project that the commission has, in fact, committed to, and they are shovel-ready, at least that's certainly my understanding, and it would be great to hear from the principals associated with this project if this is it, if this is the final ask, and are we shovel-ready, and are we ready to move? And if that's the case, I think that moves this project to a different level and a point at which it's ready to go. We have a multitude of projects that have gaps. All of you know that all too well, and we will be discussing that further in September in terms of prioritizing that $21 million. We have already spent a portion of that $21 million as a body last Friday, so just want to be clear about that.
It's my understanding it is shovel-ready. Raquel, do you have any information that would be otherwise?
So they're eligible for a building permit as of April 23rd of this year, so yes, this is a shovel-ready project.
Okay, so the item's been moved, and again, it's just setting aside the money, so there's an authorization, so we know that it will be fully funded, so we can move forward, but if there's another funding source, for example, the GO bond or the county, then we would not spend this money. So the item's been moved and seconded. Commissioner Fernandez?
If we don't spend those dollars, could we then reallocate it
to... Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. It's just to accelerate it because we can't put the shovel in the ground until we know that we have full funding. So are you okay with it, Commissioner Fernandez? Okay. Is Commissioner Minor still here?
No.
Okay. Mayor, are you okay with it? Okay. Yes.
Right.
Okay. So
thanks,
the support is there. So John, Raquel, Madam Manager, do you have what you need from us? Okay. Yes. We'll close the item. And then we've got one other item of the four. I think that was on the trolleys, John, so go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd like to ask Jose Gonzalez, Transportation Director, to join me. Yeah, we started a discussion last week about trying to bring the level of service closer to what it was pre-COVID, now that we have a recovery in resort taxes. And so we're really talking about a $2.3 million potential enhancement to get closer to that level. And I think we wanted to get a little bit more information as a whole here for the committee to make sure, we can walk through that. So we have some slides ready, and I think Jose is going to walk you through those.
Go ahead, Jose. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, committee members. Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director, for the record. And thank you. I want to thank Commissioner Arriola as well for the opportunity to really have this discussion on such an important asset to the city, a key service that we provide, and an asset to the community. So there are various key policy decisions that have brought us to where we are today in terms of our trolley service. Starting with the fact that our Comprehensive Development Master Plan for many years proposed a interconnected system of neighborhood circulators. And then more recently, the city's goal of becoming a less car-centric city. And then back in 2014, shortly after our department was created, there were several key policy decisions that were adopted by the City Commission, including for the city, what we call the modal prioritization. And that was adopted by resolution. And that's the resolution that placed and prioritized pedestrians first, bicycles and transit second, and the private automobile last. And then we embarked on a transportation master plan back in 2016. That master plan was premised on the city's adopted modal prioritization. And that master plan called for certain goals in terms of mode shift. Mode shift is essentially getting people out of cars and into alternative modes of transportation, primarily transit, biking, and walking. And so what this slide depicts is that really mass transit is the only option, if you will, that can make a difference in terms of reducing personal vehicle trips and freeing up the capacity of our congested streets. So this is just a little bit of the background as to how we got here. Next slide, please. So in 2014, we started rolling out our trolley service in a phased manner. We started with the North Beach trolley, and we completed the system back in 2017 with the rollout of the South Beach trolley. We have three neighborhood circulators, one for North Beach, one for Mid Beach, one for South Beach. The three neighborhood circulators are connected by north-south a route that we call the Collins Express that goes from Surfside to South Beach. We've received various accolades throughout the years. Most recently in 2018, we were ranked the highest of 25 municipalities that are providing circulator service in Miami-Dade County, and that's most of the cities in the county. But we were the only four-star rank. And as you can see there, we were followed by City of Coral Gables with 3 stars and on down from there. Next slide, please. So in 2019, we wanted to have a full understanding of our trolley service in terms of the users, who uses it, for what purpose, and what areas of improvement, or what are the different areas that we can improve in. So we conducted a user survey, a statistically accurate survey, back in November of 2019. And as a result of that survey, we discovered that 81% of all our users are residents. And that's a very important number, because perhaps there's a misperception out there that only the tourists use our trolley. According to this survey, pre-pandemic, of course, back then providing a higher level of service, but 81% of all users were residents, and 14% of all users were over the age of 65. So the vast majority were under the age of 65. We also wanted to know how effective our trolley service was in terms of meeting its goal of reducing vehicular car trips. And according to the survey and the engineering company that did the analytics associated with it, they translated annual ridership, which at that time we were at 5.2 million riders a year, to vehicular trips. And also based on the survey, because according to the survey, there were users that had the option of a car and used their car for many other purposes, but when in terms of navigating throughout our city, they chose to use our trolley. So that number in terms of reduction of vehicular trips is 5,373. overall service satisfaction with the reliability, with the frequency of service was at that time high. I will note that according to our most recent community survey, the one done this year, these numbers have dropped a bit. They're in the 72% overall satisfaction, and overall meaning all three components that you see there, service, reliability, and frequency. Next slide, please. So I wanted to share a little bit of our the key metrics of our trolley service. And what we're doing here is comparing the pre-pandemic service to the current service and our proposed enhancement of $2.3 million for next fiscal year. Pre-pandemic service was very robust. It was almost a $12 million annual budget. We operated for 18 hours a day at 15-minute passenger wait times. I mentioned the annual ridership of 5.2 million riders a year. The cost per passenger was very competitive at $2.30 per passenger, and we operated 25 vehicles. The current service, what we're producing, what we're providing as we speak, as of actually February, mid-February of last year, it's a reduced service level. The budget is about $7 million. We're operating 15 hours a day, 30-minute passenger wait times. You'll note that our ridership dropped significantly, 56% down to 6,300 a day or 2.3 million a year. Our cost per passenger rose as a result of that to $3 a passenger, and we're operating 15 vehicles in service rather than 25. So the next column shows the percent change. In essence, with about a 50% reduction in service, we've experienced a 56% reduction in ridership. The fiscal year 23 enhancement that we're proposing is intended to improve the passenger wait times and reduce them from 30 minutes, which is what they are currently, which is quite frankly poor service, to at least 20 minutes. It doesn't get us to where we were at the 15-minute mark, but at least it's an improvement over where we are today.
Jose,
yes,
go ahead, Commissioner. Pardon the interruption. I'm just doing some numbers. So we have about, give or take, I think 90,000 people in Miami Beach residents. And you know, you're saying 81% of the riders are residents. So if you're doing 14,000 a day, that's 11,000 of those riders are residents. 11,000 divided by 90,000 is, about 12% of the population on a daily basis is riding the trolleys. I just find that hard to believe, one of the things I want to ask, I see Mr. Centurino here, is to have an independent audit of our numbers. I struggle. I mean, I look at these things and they're empty. I struggle to find that 11 or 12% of our population on a daily basis is on these trolleys. I find it hard to believe 5 million riders a year. And I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see it. So I'm going to ask Mr. Centurino if he's got the bandwidth to audit these numbers.
How this was a survey from 2019, pre-pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And do you know the methodology? So, for example, one thing that I mentioned it, Commissioner, is one person may be taking four trips a day. So did we count that as four people?
That four trips.
Four
yes,
trips.
And you are correct,
yeah,
Mr.
So,
Chair.
So there you go. So
if I may, I'd like for our new assistant director, Milos Mastorovic, to maybe shed some light on the survey. He actually managed that effort.
Go ahead, Milos. You're recognized.
Good morning. Milos Mastorovic, Transportation and Mobility. So in terms of the survey, it took place between October and November of 2019. We had about 1,300 individuals who took the survey. And there was a team of four people in field who covered two routes, 4 hours a day, every day, for about 14 days over 4 weeks. All the routes were covered. Surveys were taken both on tablets and at the trolley stops. The participants were chosen randomly, so no same participant was answering the survey questions two times. And we used software that is called RouteSoft software, and based on a daily ridership for each route with a 95% confidence level, the initial goal was to survey about 700 users. We ended up surveying about double that. And before we even started conducting survey, we analyzed the ridership data and the land uses in order to get a good balance between the workforce and those who are residents or tourists.
Okay. So, Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, go ahead.
Commissioner Ariola, you're right. Sometimes I see a trolley go by. And it's empty. And there's some routes that are not popular. But there are other routes, for example, that South Beach Loop on 6th Street where Publix is. I mean, that trolley's packed. So, you know, as we increase this density across the city, we have to invest in the transit. I would like 15-minute head times, so no matter where you are, because it's so hot outside, you can't be waiting 30 minutes. I would invest the maximum. I don't like the trolley, though. I would like to see an electric bus or van, something sleeker, something you can easily get into with, like, a walker. Because the people using this service really are our senior populations, a lot of hospitality workers. So, you know, I would say the North Beach Loop used to be tremendously successful. I mean, I'm sure that that's packed, too. I haven't seen it. I do know that the Mid Beach one, I see it leaving Sinai all the time. That one seems to be pretty empty. So certain routes just aren't working, right?
Correct. There's some, excuse me. There's some routes that have more passengers, more ridership than others, historically.
You know, but here's the thing. We're going to need to perfect this mass transit because the county's not investing in it. We've kind of been a model for it. Let's get the electric comfortable vehicles. Let's get our ride times down to 15 minutes. Let's make it something that maybe we would even consider riding in the future. And the only way to do that right now is invest in it, especially as we increase density. And I know you're about, you know, having, you know, making it work, live, play, and increasing this density. Let's try to master this then. And the only way we can do that is by really investing as much as we possibly can in it, even though it really should be the county.
Investing
it. What?
Yeah, I want to be clear. I'm not saying I'm opposed to the trolley whatsoever. I'm supportive. Where I'm going is I want us to optimize how we're using it, right? So to your point, you know, to what extent can we, you know, cut back on routes that people just aren't riding, save that money and reinvest it, maybe increase frequency in areas that are very, very popular. I mean, I know it's nice for us to say, you know, it's citywide. You can, you know, hop on one trolley and it'll take you throughout the whole city. But that's expensive. So, you know, in areas where there's high traffic and, you know, a lot of utilization, ramp that up. But, you know, where can we cut back and reprioritize routes and dollars to where there's a lot of ridership?
Sean, I'll get to you in just a minute. Hang on. John, what I'd like to do is just get a better understanding of the numbers. So if you – because if memory serves me, part of the bucket of money that we're going to have came from not having full funding, but I may be confused on that. So is this amount of money for this enhancement, is it currently in the administration's recommended budget, or is this what we're deciding?
Yeah, the recommendation is to go ahead and fund the request, which is to add $2.3 million of newly available resort taxes that have basically recovered closer to previous amounts so that we can go ahead and restore the level of service to a higher level. Now, that level of service may be refining exactly what that looks like, and you know, I think we've talked about that there's some slides in this presentation where we potentially look at expanding freebie, maybe cutting back on some of the routes that don't have as much ridership. That picture, I think, is something that we need a little bit more time to work with the commission on. But as far as the funding decision that we need to make today, our recommendation is to go ahead and fund that, and then we can refine exactly what it looks like operationally.
So also, you know, one of the things Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez mentioned and I have as well is the electric vehicles. However, I've done some additional research since last Friday, and I guess when we did this contract, we authorized the purchase of these vans or trolleys or whatever, and so if we change that, I think that's going to be a cost to us. And also, it's my understanding that because when we cut service during the pandemic, we had a guaranteed contract, and so some of the trolleys are not being utilized now, but we're still obligated to pay for them. Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
So if we don't do this, there's still going to be some marginal cost, and I know the representative for the trolley is here. I don't know how much that is, but if we don't do this enhancement, it's not going to be like the number zero, because the trolleys are sitting, it's my understanding they're sitting, and we're having to pay some fee for storage and for them sitting. Is that right?
It's tied into the hourly operating rate. So the 15 vehicles that we are operating, the hourly rate associated with those covers the capital cost and other costs associated with the fact that some are dormant and not being used.
And so if they are being used, would that hourly rate change, or how does that work?
I believe it would, right? It would drop, most likely.
Correct. So what happened through the pandemic is really that we reduced level of service, and that we still obviously have a contractual commitment and the agreement with the operator to continue amortizing all 33 vehicles that are still being amortized. So how that the math worked out in a way that for the vehicles that we are now operating, we have to pay more per hour. So our hourly rate currently is higher. So the more service we put out there, the less we pay per hour.
Hey, exactly. Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, you're recognized.
Jose?
Yes, ma'am.
I thought we were approaching the end of this lease. I can't believe we have 33 vehicles and we're only using 15 of them, first of all. That right there is...
Well, that's terrible. A result of the reduced
but
service.
What level. I'm going to ask is I really want to move into a low-floor electric bus sleek system. This trolley is... I don't think that the trolley is a comfortable ride.
Commissioner, that can easily be addressed as part of the future RFP for the next level of service. The contract expires in a year. The department intended to start an RFP process in the fall. But I just want to caution everybody, the manufacturing of equipment will probably take another year. So we're probably 2 years away from potentially seeing those vehicles out on the street.
Go ahead.
What I would suggest, Commissioner Areola, and I know that some of these routes are empty, but I think divesting, even though there's not a lot of people on the routes, is not the right way to go, simply because it's a question of, you know, are we offering the service? Is the service readily available? Can we get the service? Can we make the service better? And we can only do that. I mean, we're not transit experts. This is something that Jose, over the past 8 years, how long have we had these trolleys now, Jose?
Since 14, so 8 years, yes.
Since, yeah, 8 years. Okay, we're 8 years in. Thank goodness we're approaching the end of that initial lease. We were doing really, really well. We got hit by the pandemic, and I would suggest, even though it's counterintuitive, to continue to invest in this so that we perfect it. In a couple of years, we're going to have better vehicles. And at that point, because we invested in the routes and the systems, you know, maybe we will have all, you know, 30 vehicles working with, you know, 15 minute wait times. Maybe we could get that down to 10 minutes and really be a model of transit.
Jose, are we able to get ridership numbers real time, or do you just have to do a survey to do that? But how do you get the ridership numbers?
We can get those pretty much on a real time basis. They're collected automatic through automatic passenger counters that each vehicle is equipped with, and we can get those numbers readily, quick.
Okay, so I'll get you just a minute, Commissioner. So I'm going to support the administration's recommendation here, but what I'd like to do is, it sounds to me like you're going to tweak the routes maybe a little bit to try to improve the situation, and so maybe you could come back mid-year or something and tell us how that plan is going. It sounds like there's only a year left, but because of infrastructure issues, we may end up having to extend the contract a year if we're not able to get new vehicles. I share the vision that we should have electric if we can do that. Commissioner Fernandez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, and I completely agree with that, and I'm wondering maybe it's something that could be, as part of the budget, incorporated into their work plan, into their goals, into the department's goals, to electrify these vehicles in the long term. And I believe in supporting the funding. You know, it's one of these things, when I see it, I think it's part of Mayor Philip Levine's legacy. It was one of the first things that he did as mayor, was going out and getting these trolleys. I think the first batch was even through a bid waiver because he really wanted to get these on the street, and the community fell in love with them, and the program grew. And I think it's been not only successful, it's been one of the most successful in Miami-Dade County. I think that there's also the ability to see how we could maybe expand also on the freebie service, because usually these trolleys, I think they stay on the main roads, but you know, the freebie service could maybe provide, you know, a last half mile, last quarter mile option for people. And I would like to see us, you know, how we could make that more readily available, more on a citywide basis, the freebie. But today I feel comfortable supporting our administration's recommendation on this.
Thank you, Commissioner. And the only thing I want to say for the record, we totally agree with the whole concept of electrification, and we've actually applied for a $15 million FTA grant that would allow us the ability to buy for the South Beach trolleys. Yeah, so I want all of you to know that. I mean, we take all of this very seriously and are very committed.
We just approved that at this meeting, right? I believe it was on the consent agenda. One of those grant applications?
It was either last month or this month, but yes, it was a grants item.
John, do we have an open trolley item in the Finance Committee or anything that this would fall under? If not, I'll bring an item, but I would like for you all to come back no later than April 1st, which would be 6 months into the fiscal year. So we're going to go ahead and green light this today, but you guys are going to work on routes, and then I want you to come back to finance, and if there's not an open item, I will put an item on the agenda to get it in finance, and then by April 1st, come back and tell us what, you know, new routes you've tried and what ridership is and then what the plan is, because this contract's going to expire in a year, and City Manager, were you saying that you were going to bring an item for an RFP? Is that the plan?
Yes, the department is working on that, and there will be an RFP hopefully in the late fall.
Of this year?
Prepared. Yes.
Okay, great. That's great. All right, Commissioner Arriola, go ahead.
Yeah, I think on your slide you showed a resolution that we passed years ago about electrifying, I think, by 2025. I think you're going to get to it in your presentation, but the cost of electrification, I mean, I think is exorbitant. So we may have to push that resolution out to future years because the technology hasn't kept up with our ambitions. And so I don't think it's realistic to say that in a couple of years we're going to be fully electric. It's super expensive. Are you going to get to that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me ask Jose, how much would it cost to do another survey? Because the last survey was done in 19. So, is this a 50,000? Is it 25? What?
It was 50,000 back in 2019, but so it should be in that slightly higher, but in that ballpark.
I don't know how you feel about it, Ms. Hudak, but I think that, you know, we putting out a new RFP, and it would be great to find out if our residents want the type of vehicle as suggested by Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, and you know, if we should have some feedback.
I think two things. I'm going to ask Amy to dig into the current resident survey and the results of the current resident survey and the transportation piece and drill down on that one and see what we have relative to how residents feel. And certainly we could do another survey. I would just ask respectfully that we do it at the point at which our service level is enhanced.
Yeah.
Because, you know, of course people aren't riding our trolleys. It takes half an hour for one to come. And so people just give up and take some alternative mode of transportation. So I think to do one now would be skewed. It would be great to be able to do one once we do the enhancement.
So perhaps maybe in 6 months or so into the fiscal year, and maybe in April or so. So are you all comfortable putting $100,000 in the budget for another survey, or do you want them to come back and make that specific proposal?
Can I ask Mr. Santorino, would you be up for the challenge of doing your own study, and how might you do that? you can do it. Would you mind coming up? Yeah. I mean, whether we hire consultants or something, it's just I think, you know, at least for me, I would feel more comfortable to have some independence on the study.
Right. We will. In fact, we have an interest in the trolley. I think the manager has spoken to us about that, and we have begun to do some preliminary work on it. So I think we probably should sit down and find out exactly what the transportation has, and we'll. And if you want, well, I'll meet with you if you want. And if you want to give me more information about what the scope of you'd like to see, that we will certainly do something with that.
Yeah, I think that's fine to have an independent audit. I know that you've got a lot on your plate, though, and we want to keep everything moving. Commissioner Fernandez, go ahead.
Yeah, Madam Manager, I'm just trying to understand the concern raised to the
inspector. No, my conversations with the Inspector General have been in the context of talking about the audit function and the fact that, obviously, as we all know, the audit function is within the IG, and my inability to be able to audit contracts in general. And we've had conversations about this contract in particular. This contract, it's on its 12th, 13th amendment, and obviously I think it's important for the city to have that capability, and we've talked about what the IG could do relative to audit, the audit aspect of it. But I believe that Commissioner Arriola's concerns are specific to the survey that was done and auditing the survey itself, not the contract, if I understood you correctly.
Yeah, not the contract. I just want to get, you know, further validation on our rider numbers, because, I mean, these rider numbers are very impressive. And, you know, you know, my view is not scientific. It's just what I see, right? And I see empty trolleys. Doesn't mean that it's right. So I just would like to have, you know, an independent verification that the ridership is 14,000 a day.
And if so I could about regain the floor, Mr. Chairman, because I yielded to the manager. So I'm going to support you in the request that you're asking of the Inspector General, but I just want to know, because I want to be careful. I don't like overworking people. How many open investigations does your office have right now?
What you're asking for is an audit here. There's the difference between an investigation and an audit.
Well, how much work do you have right now?
We have plenty of work. Actually, my chief auditor's here and probably knows the more than I do the exact figure. But what I think I'm hearing.
But I would like Mr. Inspector General, how much. Between audits and investigations, how much work do you have right now?
Well, we have more auditors invested. We have many more audits.
Mr. Inspector General, my question is, how many cases is your office working on right now? How much open work do you have right now?
I don't think we are very busy. We are very busy. I don't have the exact number, and I wouldn't probably give that number out at this point, because I don't have it. But we have all of our auditors are busy. There is a sort of we have a few things in queue that we're expecting to work on that we haven't worked on. But, you know, we are able to prioritize things, too. And what I think I'm hearing from Commissioner Arriola is that we're not going to redo the survey. I mean, this is something he's looking to check on some of the numbers. I think we can do that without too much.
You know, let me jump in there. And Commissioner Arriola, I mean, I don't see a lot of value in auditing the 2019 survey. I don't. What I want is a new survey. So, and then we get the new survey, and then we should ask our auditors to look at that survey if they have any concerns with methodology, perhaps. But
The new survey is what's going to help us with our policy direction, how we want to allocate our funding, and that's why it's
And
so
also, important. We should make sure the survey is structured in a way that we get comfort about ridership. So, Mr. IG, you make your decisions about what you'd like to audit, but I don't really see any need in going back and auditing a survey in 19. Let's wait till we get a new survey. And I agree with you, Madam Manager, that we should wait until this new implementation is made so that we have good information. So you make that decision if it's 6 months or 8 months in, but it's going to inform our policy on the next contract.
Yeah, that's fine, and I actually welcome Joe's staff to participate in the development of the survey. Yeah. Well, we could work side by side on that.
I was going to say that it might save everybody some time if we worked on the, you know, we vetted the methodology at the outset, and if there's the question of spot checking to just say make sure that you know that the thing is being done accurately, we can do that. I think that would be probably a good collaborative effort.
I think that sounds like a great plan. So, John, I think we've given you guidance today. In addition to the enhancement, we're also going to earmark $100,000, up to $100,000, to do a new survey in the fiscal year, so we'll be better informed in our decision-making on the future contract. You got what you need?
Yes, sir.
All right. Mr. IG, you got what you need?
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Jose, I think we're probably good with this. What I'd like to do, if we can, John, is just skip to slide 28 with the additional follow-up items so the members will know what we...
Absolutely.
These are items that... These were also open items that we asked the administration to come back to us in September because he's going to need some additional time. Go ahead, Commissioner Fernandez.
You know, one of the items that I just wanted to ask the manager if she could go back and study and look at is the bicycle pedestrian position that's unfunded. We keep on working on our bicycle infrastructure. In fact, the other day we brought an item to having to do with Washington Avenue and making it more bicycle and pedestrian friendly by taking automobiles away from, or reducing the amount of parking there and all that. And so these positions are important, these bicycle and pedestrian positions in the department. Madam Manager, if you could go back and study that and analyze that. I know it's very difficult because dollars are limited.
Look at it. Like, as I mentioned last Friday, every department and every director sitting in the audience today had a very long list of needs and priorities, and it was difficult, again, to balance that and to be prioritized. And we asked each of them to prioritize, and then based on, you know, the available funding, we made decisions. So I'm happy to look at that position.
How about
again.
We do this? We've got on slide 28, there are four additional items that we ask you all to study. But you're going to need more time, so you're going to come on September 14th, which will be our first budget hearing. And then how about to satisfy Commissioner Fernandez's request, I don't want to give a special shout-out to Jose, so how about you take a look at all of the departments and that had headcount increases and just come back and tell us if you want to make any recommended changes.
Happy to do that. All right. Happy to fund all of them, actually.
Sure.
The need is real.
No, I know. Absolutely. Okay, members, I think we've come to the conclusion. If there's no other business before the meeting, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.